There is a dead planet somewhere up there in the infinite blackness of space, floating for eternity. Its home star long since dead, its solar system gone and engulfed by the hungry star. A thing that once gave it life, now extinguished. And so it floats through the infinite void. The surface of the planet, dead, cold, and uninhabitable. Although, on the inside of the planet, there is still some tiny spark of life. There are things in the core of the planet, white and blind things wriggling in its center like maggots in a rotten apple. They shriek silently and wail and cannibalize each other and their children just to survive. This planet has no name. There is no culture. There is no history anymore. All that once was is dead, and its blackened surface is peppered with hollowed out reminders of greater times. And this terrifying behemoth was once called Earth. Transmissions from Innsmouth, the Conqueror World Podcast.
Greetings and salutations, all ye faithful friends, boys, girls, men, women, and everything in between. This is your friend and compatriot, Milan Jeftik, once again, back again, for another wondrous little podcast from the greatest place on earth besides Disneyland, Innsmouth. And my son is here with me, sitting on my lap. He has grown quite large, haven't you, my boy?
I will devour your souls.
Yes, well, little Billy has been getting bigger and bigger. We've been feeding him a lot, and, well, his grandmother's just babying the ever-living heck out of him. Oh, good old Mother Hydra. Always know where to find the greatest and sweetest examples of virgin purity. Lovely woman. But anyway, he's been asking, why don't you tell the people what you asked me, my dear boy?
I wish to know how the human reproductive system works.
And yes, ladies and gentlemen, this can be a very troubling time for a parent when your child comes up to you and demands to know about the birds and the bees. Well, in our case, the octopus and the larva. Well, my dear boy, let us begin. When a woman and a man, or female and male, sometimes male-male or female-female or something in between, love each other very much, they decide to have sex. But it really only works if you're a female and a male. If you are a male and a male, or a female and a female, some skullduggery in the fields of science is required to breed. Well, there, human beings have these things called genitals. The male of the species has what most refer to as the penis. It is a sack of boneless flesh that fills up with blood whenever the creature, the male human creature, is aroused. and it becomes rock hard or unsatisfyingly limp, depending on the breeding stock of the human. And yes, the thing is, it spits out a viscous, whitish, despicable smelling substance whenever it is happy. Yeah, some scientists have theorized that this creature might be a whole other entity attached, parasitic-like, to the lower half of the human creature, because there have been shown many examples of this penis creature having its own brand of sentience outside of that of the human mind. The male human mind, as it were. And yes, this creature, this penis, this hideous worm that dangles between the legs of the specimen is really quite disgusting and unappealing to most females and, well, and most men as well. But regardless of its hideousness and obvious untrustworthiness in the act of sex, this creature, this penis, has its charming sides and is rather delightful in certain circles. Is considered to be rather delightful in certain circles. Other technical names for the human penis is the tallywhacker, the one-eyed trouser snake, the disfigured Irishman, the good old John Thomas, the Jolly Roger, the broken-faced demon thing in the pants that screeches silently whenever the female is around. That is what the Catholic Church calls it. And, of course, the grand old name of the cock, which is rather brisk and right to the point, and really does borrow a lot from, well, the early neo-pagan fishman cult languages of the River Nye, mostly favored during the turn of the century Jurassic period of Sumeria. The word actually translates into grand old one-eye thing that excretes the life goo into the female body canon. It roughly translates into that. My old-timey Sumerian isn't very good.
Fascinating. What stimulates it?
I already told you.
Well, go into more specific territory, Father.
Well, my dear boy, look, if you wish to know what stimulates it, I'm going to go into the most basic default. There are many hideous, terrifying things that stimulate the male penis, but the most run-of-the-mill one is the female vagina, or the female breast lumps on the chest. Technically known as happy fun pillows. Oh, yeah, boy. That can't be right. Anyway, yeah. The other thing that most of the time enthralls the human being into its reproductive cycle is the female's posterior, also known as the badonkadonk. Also, the very main thing, as I mentioned before, is the vagina, which I think we should move on to this part of the female's anatomy first, and then we'll talk about the breasts and the badonkadonk. Well, the human female vagina is like a rose made from the flayed skin of deserters.
You mean like Grandma Gilman's tea bags?
Yes, my dear boy, like Grandma Gilman's tea bags, which are made from the flayed flesh of deserters. And yes, if you can imagine a vagina, my dear boy, it's basically like a rose made from the shorn flesh of deserters. It's like a meat flower, as it were, that opens up and squirts liquid in your face whenever it is pleased. Yes, it smells of rotting fish, which is a bonus. That's why most of the younger folk in the fishman community really do tend to go for the human girls or, you know, sweet old bipedal monkey flesh, as the younger folks call them, as they go running around on their bouncy cars listening to their rap music. God. But anyway, yeah, basically, yeah.
What do you mean, monkey flesh?
Well, you see, the human species has evolved from a kind of slave species, a kind of ape-like ancestor that was originally designed by the Grand Old Ones, or...
Grand Old Ones?
Your grandfather calls them the damn no-good starfish-headed barrel-chested flying cunts. You know, the guys the Cthuloids fought in the war, the Great One.
Oh, them. Aren't they all dead?
Well, they have cities at the poles, at the opposite poles of the Earth, but they're not all dead. Some of them have gone into hibernation. But yes, their population size has been decreased quite a lot. And, when the Shuggoths rebelled, that's when, well... The Grand Old Ones kind of, well, took a hit. And were never really the same again. But anyway, this is not a history lesson. This is the lesson of how, where human beings come from and where their sexual desires come from. Basically, the human beings were kind of created to be entertainment / easy labor / food for the Grand Old Ones. But once they designed the Shoggoths, these amorphous, gigantic... multi-tentacle, ever-morphing sludge creatures with trillions of eyes. We can't forget that. The Shuggoths have trillions of eyes that stay never in the same place and shift and warp and become things. And yeah. It's really hard to describe a Shuggoth without going insane slightly. But yeah, anyway. Basically, the human being, well... What the human being would eventually evolve from would it couldn't compete with the sheer industriousness of the Shuggoth, and so they were kind of left to their own devices, and eventually they evolved into human beings. And my son, please don't fool yourself into thinking that the Grand Old Ones cared for the human thing. I mean, they used them for cheap labor, and killing them all would have taken far too much time and effort and resources, so they just kind of left them to their own devices. Don't mistake yourself into thinking that they actually cared about them, because they had no interest in them at all. If they cared about them, they would have destroyed them. If they cared enough about them, they would have destroyed them, but they were just seen as less than anything vaguely sentient to the Grand Old Ones. And so, yeah, eventually the human being evolved, the yada yada yada, long story short. The human being loves to fuck, as it were. It loves to procreate. It's this one simple thing is coded into its genetics by the Old Ones. You see, the Grand Old Ones couldn't just keep remaking these creatures from leftover flesh. They needed them to breed and to multiply, and so they finagled the pre-human creature's DNA a wee bit to make it want to have sex all the time. And, yeah, it seemed to work out for them. You know, it kind of became an evolutionary advantage over time. Those who passed on their genes had to, well... become stronger, smarter, faster, and better adapt to their environment if they wish to pass on their genes. And yes, now we have what we call humans, what we currently call humans. We have no clue what they might evolve into if we give them enough breathing space. But, you know, thankfully, they are choking the Earth and killing it slowly. So I'm sure they haven't evolved intellectually beyond their basic subhuman needs. They all still want to fuck and kill each other. Actually, the killing stuff really didn't come in, because the Grand Old Ones couldn't have their slaves killing each other. They were quite industrious and not really thoughtful, but ant-like in their organization skills when they were first created. The whole killing each other part really kind of came about naturally, I think, and yeah. Obviously, you're going to have some degeneration over the generations, as it were. But yeah, where was I?
Sex.
Oh, yes, sex. Yeah, so the human male plunges his hard, rock-hard penis into the vast open spaces of the female's vagina and halfway exit, not soon after, and then go back in and out, in and out, in and out, in and out, and the friction and the apparent sexual pleasure makes the male ejaculate, and yes, the viscous, I don't know if I should tell you the rest, it gets rather disgusting, but yes, the human seed, as it were, fertilizes the egg inside the woman's womb, and over a period of 9 months, the creature, the infant human creature, bursts out out of the female's open, vast, cavernous vagina, then proceeds to latch itself upon its parents using its evolutionary advantages of being hideously adorable in convincing the parents that they are morally obligated to look after the creature. And yes, the creature grows up and eventually leaves the two parent things and goes off and makes more human beings. And yeah, this is getting really awkward, son. I don't know. I think you're a wee bit young to hear this, don't you think?
Oh, it's okay, Dad. I think this is fascinating. How did you and Mom make me?
Oh, well, that is a lot more wholesome and a lot more less unnatural than how those freaky humans do it. Well, basically, the male demon, well, that's a little hard to say because gender politics in the demon world doesn't really exist. It's whatever you want to be, and since flesh and its shape isn't exactly a set rule, because since most demons exist in a non-physical plane, anything goes, really. But most of the time, your average quote-unquote male demon has a thingy called a vengungulja, which is it's a little hard to describe. It's not exactly like a male penis. It has 6 heads with little gills on the sides, and possibly some may have wings, others may have scales. On each demon, it really varies, really depending if you're a submissive or a dominant. They're basically kind of sort of like snake-like creatures with 16 little forked tongues coming out their mouths. Oh, by the way, they have human faces at the end of them. And they talk and spout prophecies of doom regarding the human realm and any individual human being that might be confronted with one, or two, or all of them. Yes, how they act is, well, they go inside the female, quote-unquote, demons, Grungadja, which is kind of this, it's this quasi-disruption in the fabric of time and space. It's kind of a black hole between the female's legs. It's an infinite space where the male, Vengungleja, is thrust inside this infinite space and mates with the cosmic egg in the middle of this infinite space. And their mating might last, you know, in real space and time, billions and trillions of years as atoms are created and destroyed and matter is, well, transformed into a non-Euclidean stasis, as it were, if you get my drift. But in relative time, the sexual act kind of takes roughly about 15 minutes, depending on how much enjoyment one demon wishes to receive. And after the cosmic egg has been impregnated by the male Kunglaja, the creatures are withdrawn from the cosmic hole in space between the female's legs, and the male Kunglaja retreats back into its pouch and, I believe, smokes a cigarette. They all tend to smoke cigarettes, and the sexual act is done, and nearly instantly the spawn creature erupts from the female demon's doom womb, as it were. For this demon creature, its physical appearance really depends on its predestined personality. But that's just your average demon spawn. How your mother and I copulated is a little different, since, well, I am partly human, as you well know. Your grandmother is a Russian lady, which some would say is even more terrifying than anything can be found in hell. But, I do have some human attributes in me, and I rather not show you the hideous monstrosity dangling between my legs, because I think it might be a wee bit inappropriate for you being of such a young age, and such, I'll show it to you when you're a wee bit older. But your mother, you see, she, on the other hand, is not demon nor human. She is a fully developed, mature, deep one, with a wee bit of divine DNA. She being a descendant of, well, a spawn of your grandfather, obviously. And what she possesses is something that I did not get a very close look at, since I was tied to a stone slab and being baptized and nearly drowned at the same time during the ritual. And of course, I believe I was drugged quite a lot during the copulation ceremony. But yes, what I remember seeing when I went down on your mother was this... God. It was this writhing, screeching thing. Hold on, let me just try to remember clearly.
Dad?
Yes, son?
You're bleeding.
Oh, from what orifice?
Your eyes, nose, and ears.
Oh. Well, I guess I should stop remembering then. We don't want another brain hemorrhage now, do we? Anyway. I think you're a wee bit too young, and I am not fit of body and mind enough to describe to you your mother's vagina.
It's all right, Dad. Dad?
Yeah, son?
I love you.
I love you too, son.
Come here, you little scamp. God, tickle your belly. God, tickle your belly. God! God!
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son. I love you too. Say, son.
Yeah, Dad.
You want to know what was the first thing I did after I finished procreating with your mother?
What?
Basically, I was hit at the back of the head with a kosh and thrown out of the temple. When I came to, I believe I was somewhere in Arkham. I had a giant plastic dirty jug super glued to my left hand. And, I got up and started wandering the streets of Arkham. It was about 12 o'clock at night, and I found a berry tree and started picking berries in the night. I filled the jug nearly to the very top and started eating the berries. I then took a berry or two and used the blood-red juice from it to paint on a light-hearted clown face. For some reason, my real face wasn't working. I couldn't express any sort of emotion. So I drew on a big old red smile and crosses on my eyes,
with the berry juice and went walking in Arkham, holding my giant dirty jug full of berries, my fingers and hands red with their juices, and my dark wanderings went on for an indeterminate amount of time. For me, at that point, time ceased to be an actual thing. So it was just me with a painted-on clown face, with a dirty jug, plastic jug filled with berries, walking around the streets, naked, talking to myself in a very high-pitched, squealish, childlike voice, only intermingled with violent, deep threats. I don't remember exactly what happened, but I think I was replaying a traumatic thing that happened to me from my childhood. But only in vocal terms. So,
oh, please don't hurt me. Please, Mummy, don't beat me again.
You dirty bastard, how dare you steal my candy?
Oh, no, Mummy, don't hurt me.
Something like that, but much more high-pitched and squealing with a lot more frantic energy to it. And yeah, I met a few random people who were walking for some reason, like nighttime walking their dogs, and they just saw me, a naked man with berry juice in the visage of a clown on my face, dirty red stained hands with a dirty jug glued to my hands, and I stopped in front of them and offered them a berry, saying,
"Have a raspberry. Have a raspberry."
And like my voice, as high-pitched and squealing as it was, portrayed all the emotion that my face lacked. I then would smile at the person, and then cry while smiling. My eyes never portraying any sort of real emotion. And I would just stare them down with a hideous rictus grin splitting my face open. That night seemed to last for years, for some reason, for me at least. Just me wandering the dark streets of Arkham naked, with a jug of raspberries, offering them to random strangers stupid enough to be walking out in such a late hour in such a haunted city. Then I passed out and somehow ended up back in Innsmouth. And yeah, I was married to your mother from that day on. Yeah, you were born not a few days later, and yeah, that's the story of how you were born and how I and your mother met. Well, not met, as it were, but met in the biblical term of the word met. We knew each other biblically. Not biblically, but necronomicon-ly, as it were.
That's a really sweet story, Dad.
I'm really glad you think so, son. So, God, look at the time. It's nearly sunup. You should really get to bed.
Oh, come on, Dad. I want to play Nintendo.
No, son, I'm sorry. Your mother would skin me alive if she knew you were past, your bedtime. So, yeah, come on, let's go. I'll just go tuck you in. I spent the rest of that night in a hotel, staring at my face in the bathroom mirror, son, smiling with my eyes as dead as two pieces of coals in my skull. I smiled until my cheeks nearly burst. I then cried while still smiling, the berry juice running down my face like mascara. That was a good night. Good night, son.
Good night, Dad.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, my son is asleep and his noggin is filled with knowledge that would serve him all his life and also haunt him all his life.
Before we go, I'd just like to plug a few things. Please go out and check out my YouTube channel. A YouTube channel where I pretend to be a human. So don't tell anyone that I'm actually a demon. It's called Melange Uftik 1992. You can also follow me on Twitter, at Melange Uftik. You can also send me fan art if you want at milan.juftik1992@gmail.com. You can also go check out a podcast, a YouTube-based podcast that I do with two other fine human gentlemen named Sid Partoo and Zazubar on YouTube. It's a really great podcast, one of the greatest things YouTube has ever created, and please go subscribe to those two fine individuals I just mentioned and check out the podcast once again. It's called The Geeky Gentleman. Not The Geeky Gentleman, just Geeky Gentleman. Yeah, I do most of the art for that podcast, and it's there's a really great visual element, even though it's a podcast, but yeah. This is going to be part two of Vasilisa and Baba Yaga, the fairy tale that you heard from last podcast's ending story time. All right, and anyway, better make my farewells quick before my wife gets back and I wake up my son. This has been your friend and compatriot Milan Javtek here in Innsmouth, and hold on. I'm just... There's somebody standing outside my window. Is that a clown? There's a clown standing outside my window in the dark. He's pointing at me. He's smiling. And... Is he... He's masturbating. There's a masturbating clown outside my window, standing in the dark and pointing at me. That's my dream! What the fuck? That's what I always wanted to do! God, what a go-getting individual! You know what? I'm gonna let him in.
No, Dad! Don't let in the clown! He'll eat our faces!
Oh! Are you sure, son? He's waving at us. He has balloons, and they float. They're floating against the wind towards us. They're defying the laws of nature. They float, son. He has balloons that float. I'm gonna let him in.
No, Dad! Don't! The circus is in town.
Huh. The clowns disappeared into the darkness. Want to go tomorrow?
Oh, hell yeah.
Vasilisa wasn't all too convinced. Her mother told her about magic and the wondrous things in the forest that sometimes helped everyday folk with their problems, but she never truly believed that they were real, just fairy tales that her mother would tell her before she went to sleep.
Do not fear, Vasilisa. Come here. How would I even hurt you? I am but a little doll. Besides, why would your mother give me to you? I would not harm you. I would never harm you. I only wish you goodwill.
Vasilisa thought for a little while, and then tentatively came around from behind the stump and picked up the small doll.
Well, hello, little doll. What exactly... am I to do now? Well, Vasilisa, we're gonna go do what your stepmother told us to go do. But first, do you have the handkerchief that your mother gave you? Yes, I do. And the comb that your mother gave you? Yes, I do. Keep those safe, Vasilisa, and listen to everything I say. Trust me completely, and do not fear. If you do this, no harm will come to you.
Vasilisa sighed and thought, well, I'm going off to grab a glowing skull from a cannibalistic witch that lives in the forest, and I'm taking advice from a doll. What's the worst that can happen? Vasilisa sighed, put the doll in her pocket, and walked on into the forest. And so Vasilisa walked all the way through the night, with the doll under her arm, jumping slightly whenever she heard a wolf howl somewhere in the distance, and the owls hoot up in the treetops. But the doll kept reassuring her that no harm would come to her if she only stayed as quiet as a mouse and keep her walking stick handy. And so as she walked and walked and walked through the forest, deeper and deeper, much further than she or anybody else has ever gone, the sun started to come up. And as it did, she saw a rider all in white, with white armor and white sword and white horse, trotting towards her on the horizon as the sun went up. The rider looked fresh and awake, with the light of a morning sun in his eyes. Vasilisa stopped him and asked in which direction she could find Baba Yaga. The rider told her, and she gave him a little bit of her bread. As he thanked her, he galloped on into the distance with the morning sun following him overhead. And as she kept walking through the woods and the sun reached its zenith, another rider came barreling past, a rider all in red with fiery sword and cloak, the horse as deep red as blood itself. He stopped by her and she asked him where to go. He told her and she gave him some of her water. He drank deeply, thanked her, and galloped on, the blazing sun following his progress. And as she kept walking and walking and walking and walking, and the woods became darker and darker and more wild and untamed, the sun started to sink once more. And as it did, a third rider came. A rider with a black stallion and a black cloak and clothes with a hood covering his grim, sad, tired visage. She stopped him and gave him some food and water, the last she had. The rider just looked at her, smiled, and pointed the way without hurry needing to even ask. Then he rode off, with the sun following him, disappearing behind the treetops, leaving only a dark blue dying sky. The light was fading, and if she didn't find Baba Yaga's cottage soon, the wolves would surely get her. But then she saw a light off in the distance, many lights, like eyes peering from the darkness. The doll told her to follow them.
Follow the lights, Vasilisa. Follow them, for that is the cottage of the cannibalistic witch, Baba Yaga.
And as Vasilisa made her way closer and closer towards the lights, she finally came upon the cottage of the witch. It wasn't as big as she expected, but the thing that really set her off was that it was on giant chicken legs and stood with its back facing her and its front facing the forest. But that didn't frighten her all that much. The real thing that scared her was that around the cottage was built a fence made out of human bone. Little bones. Children's bones. Bones from the bodies of people of all ages. And on each spike there rested a skull. A skull which within each one of them glowed a green, eldritch light that seemed to never flicker or go out. A cold chill ran through Vasilisa as the doll tried to reassure her. The wind started to pick up, and Vasilisa ran behind a rock, knowing what was to come. The wind blew and blew. The leaves and sticks on the ground went flying everywhere as the treetops parted to make way for the witch. The wind howled as she flew in on a giant mortar and pestle, using one to navigate the other, landing in front of her cottage and climbing out. She was thin as a skeleton and old as the mountains themselves. She had a long, pointy nose and teeth black as iron. She used her broom as a walking stick, for one of her legs was so wizened and so thin that it looked that it was taken by some sort of horrible disease, looking like nothing more than a piece of bone that had some old and graying skin wrapped around it. The old witch came forward and stood in front of her cottage and said,
"Cottage, oh my cottage, turn your back to the forest and your front to me."
And the cottage obeyed. Being supported on giant chicken legs, it waddled slowly to face Baba Yaga. The old witch then stopped before going inside and looked around, sniffing the air like an animal. I smell the blood of a Russian born. Come out, girl. I know you are here. I smell your fear. And if you do not obey, I will come and I will find you. Tell me, what is it that you want? And if you dare try to disobey me, I will make soup from your bones. Vasilisa ran out from the rock, being far too afraid to disobey the witch.
I am Vasilisa. I was sent here by my stepmother to get one of your skulls, for we have no lights in our home.
Well, your stepmother doesn't like you very much, does she? Said the old witch.
No, not really.
She expects me to eat you whole.
I'm sure she does.
What a terrible woman.
She has her moments of kindness.
You are a bad liar, girl. So, you're probably wondering why I have not eaten you yet.
Yes.
Well, I need somebody to look after the house while I'm away on my business. You will be my maid, and if you serve me well, and do not argue, and are not lazy, then you will get what you want. But if you dare disobey me, I will rip the meat from your very bones, and add what remains to my fence. Do we have a deal?
We have a deal.
Good. Now, let me show you around.
Vasilisa was too terrified to disagree.